Welcome to the Penny Arcade Staff Podcast, and today we're going to talk about Acquisitions, Inc.
Is it like the very special episode of Blossom? It's a very special episode.
This is a very special episode.
The Staff Podcast. Inc.
is precious. I guess, yeah, it is.
So it's
people
myself,
have requested this.
Mr. Jeff.
Mr. Jeff.
I'm just going to throw that on there. I'm trying to gain some
AKA
authority after
Mr.
losing
Yuck.
It over the last 2 days.
And Mike Failauer.
And D&D Josh players. So people are wanting to know essentially the origin story of Acquisitions, Inc. live.
Reveal for the first time.
The Ram Restaurant.
The Ram Restaurant in Northgate Mall.
In Northgate Mall.
In
this,
Seattle.
This came, a project came to us on account of some pretty intense solicitation from a certain D&D player in the office to Wizards of the Coast to be a helper or a promoter of the launch of D&D 4th Edition. And
they came to us with a request.
Yeah, their agency, actually.
For a proposal.
Their agency came in and said, all right, cool. We really like your guys' style. We believe that you've got a lot of passion for this. Your site matches up. Here's a giant request for proposal. It was a
and
large
like,
one.
What do you want to do? They want to do more than just ads.
Well, we looked at it and we said, wow, this is a very big budget. And
yeah, how can we
specced it out and we said, we can't actually run enough ads to eat up this entire budget.
Let's do something creative and fun.
So as often happens when we get one of those, we go to the fellas. And in this instance, Jeff and I talked about it.
Which is funny because they are always, they hate it.
They hate it.
When the sales guys come to them and go, hey, we need to set up a lunch meeting.
Yeah.
Because they dread it. They just, yeah, they never know what we're going to tell them.
We took them out to the Ram Restaurant, which Mike really likes. So we were definitely buttering him up.
Our office used to be out in that neighborhood of Seattle, so that's why we went there.
And said, yeah, we've got this big budget. It's for Dungeons & Dragons. Ads aren't enough. What can we do creatively to make this budget work for us? And
Mike... It was Mike originally was like, well, I've never played. It might be interesting if I played in a game and we recorded it. And I remember the look of astonishment and joy on Jerry's face.
Yeah.
It's like, really? You do that?
Sure, and why not?
Yeah. So, and then we decided, okay, well, we need more than just the two of you to play. We could do that. Basically, we just play a game,
mm-hmm,
and record it. So immediately they thought of Scott.
Yeah, that was a no-brainer.
And we were just keep it at that. We did keep it at that three for the first one.
Now, is Scott, had he moved up already?
No, we flew him in.
That's right.
That was part of the budget. We flew him up from Dallas. And then Wizards of the Coast, so we put the deal together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be, we were going to record all day. And we were super nervous about Wizards of the Coast sending someone that would not gel well with the guys. So we gave them all sorts of like, okay, we got to make sure the DM's not the funny man in the room.
Well,
let the guys,
you skipped over the selling part, which was not
It wasn't a hard sell.
Well, it was difficult for the agency to buy.
Oh yeah,
it,
the agency's always weird.
We did the end
things.
Run and talked to Wizards directly.
Agencies are dealing with a lot of other clients,
yes,
that aren't just...
Right. To actually, that's the thing about, oh God, can we rant about agencies
no,
a little
we can't.
Bit?
Just, we right. can, but that little bit of inside baseball, right? They're dealing with soda accounts and car accounts. And a lot of times we know their product from their client better than they do.
He means always.
So yeah, like, and sometimes we even have better relationships with their clients than they do.
Well,
the
director of marketing was one of the best men at my wedding.
Yeah, see, so... We had some ins, and so yeah. I think we actually, the agency didn't understand it. Wizards did.
Right.
And I think we ended up doing the deal directly with Wizards.
That one did.
That one.
Well, it was sort of like this weird hybrid thing, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So they bought into it, and we solicited Dungeon Master. We put the stipulations.
And they sent over two Dungeon Masters.
They did.
And we set up...
In the break room.
It was our break room. So we had this little office in North Seattle that was actually, part of it was a converted apartment.
Uh-huh.
And so our break room was also our kitchen, and there was no ventilation and no windows. And we set them up in there. We bought them Chinese food. We flew Scott up, and honestly, the character creations, you hear them live.
Yeah,
on that very first podcast.
Yeah,
the guys. In fact, they make fun of Mike for creating the last name Jim Darkman.
Yeah, Scott had
Scott ripped into him hard.
Might as well call him Chet Awesome Layer Laser. I think it was.
And like those characters had zero creation background thought process behind them.
No, it was all live
until that recording. Now, I know that Scott had in his past D&D days used. Bronzebottom, like the name. He'd used that character name before.
That's a legacy.
Yeah, as most, I guess it's pretty common among dust or
among tabletop. Dwarves.
No, among tabletop role players is they've got a character that they adapt to different
sometimes
play, like a name or a type of character. Or
sometimes, yeah, yeah. That so, that same director always plays ninjas.
Here's a little Easter egg: the water cooler at the office was in that break room. And at one point, Mike goes in to pour himself a glass of water, and you can hear faintly in the background of one of the podcasts the big air gurgle bubbles from... Because you went... and it was like right as they all got quiet for a moment. This is glug, 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 glug. So we didn't have the best of equipment.
I had to see it, you know? Like, I didn't want to be in there to like spoil it or laugh or have those, you know... Interfere, in other words, but this is a dream come true, you know, to have my buddies, and I was a fan of PA before I, you know, joined it, playing the formative game of my life, you know, promotionally, and to help with the launch of this new edition, which I'd been playtesting for months and months, was, I had to see it. I had to get a glimpse. It's
very, I think we bought some Guitar Center mics.
Yeah, that's right.
How did we get the mixer? I think I...
No, we borrowed it.
Oh, like, I borrowed it from my stepdad.
Yeah, for years. It was like
we borrowed it from my stepdad because we didn't have any of that equipment in-house.
Yeah. It's hacked and together.
Kiko sat in and monitored the audio levels.
Sure, why not?
And he ended up editing, doing the audio editing too, Kiko.
Yeah.
For those first one. But the big thing coming away from the first one is, no disrespect to the second Dungeon Master we had, but they really clicked. With Chris Perkins.
Yep.
I mean, and Chris is super understated in that first series.
Yeah, he deliberately did not want to inject too much Chris. But
they clicked and...
He created a canvas upon which they could paint.
So we were editing him furiously, and Kiko's not a natural editor. He was doing the best he could, but we were releasing them weekly, and we knew that we had stumbled on something when I think it was... The fourth episode was a little late. Like, it didn't go up at the time it was supposed to. And the comment section was full of people pissed off that it was late. Mm-hmm. And we went, well, this is advertising, really. Mm-hmm. That was the goal of it. Mm-hmm. It was to promote the game. But it was also content. And when people are mad that their advertising was not showing up on time, it's like, oh, wow, this has got some oomph behind it. This is a lot of fun. And as soon as it was done, right, we kept pestering him about, we got to do it again. We got to do it again, and we need a fourth. Mm-hmm. And I think it was
That came on a little bit later. I think we did...
No.
Two with just the three of them?
No.
It was immediate?
We did the one. It was immediately we added a fourth, because we knew we needed a fourth player.
Oh, okay.
A true party is four. And we really need we wanted him to be more roguelike, right? We wanted him to be like the thief, the sneak.
I didn't inject any of that.
No, you didn't, but I was suggesting it.
Yeah.
Even though I don't play. And I think it was the guys and Scott, they had a pretty good friendship with Will before his...
Yeah, the history with Will was we're trying to find a keynote for one of the PAXes, and you mentioned like, hey, the guys have a rapport with Wheaton, why not ask him? And it worked out great.
Yeah, he was super excited. So the next time they had an adventure,
gave him a ring.
We gave him a ring, and
it's even way back then. This is like 08.
We were still in that old office.
Yeah. And he was still primarily blogging.
He had not done a lot of guest television stuff, pre Geek and Sundry. Yeah, no
breakout.
No, there was no big Bane Theory guest spots. No, was it?
He was a writer.
CSI he had done. Yeah, he was writing. He was doing his books.
Yeah, great books.
And yeah, I came on and
but his affinity for D&D and role playing was obviously very, very well known. AFL.
And so they came and re-recorded in that tiny break room again.
Yep.
And it was all day. Perkins came. It was hot.
Yep.
And again, huge success.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do it again. So we didn't want to do it in the same location. So they actually recorded it at Robert's house.
Oh, right.
And it turns out the acoustics were, even though it wasn't more comfortable for the players,
mm-hmm.
the acoustics, if you listen to that third series, it's really echoey.
Well, his house is one big volume.
Yeah, it's wood floors and giant floor-to-wall windows.
Yeah.
It was at the time, at least. And it's super echoey. But I remember them coming back, and instead of being happy and like super excited about the adventure,
mm-hmm.
they were all bummed because Eofel had died.
Oh, right. There was some acrimony.
They were freaked out.
Yeah.
They were seriously freaked out because by then, Jim and Benwin had really taken on an identity. Like they'd become personalities and characters.
Right.
Omen to a degree, but really those just because of the creators behind it. And I remember Mike going, I don't know what I'd do if Ben or if Jim died.
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know if we had merch at that time yet. I don't think we
did. I remember driving Will back to the airport and he was so sad.
Yeah, he was disappointed.
Like genuinely sad. And he just, like there was a moment and pause in the conversation. He just sort of was looking in his lap and said softly, like, I've never died before, you know? It's like, it's like this sad moment, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, there's this in D&D, death is a condition, like blinded or poison, like the right spell, and you're patched right up.
And so, I maybe we should do a little behind the scenes pathos at this point. So, I don't know how much inside baseball to get, and I don't want to. As with any big corporation, a lot, you know, there's turnover,
mm-hmm.
and the people that approve one project go on to something else, and new people come on, and so we did find ourselves having to resell Acquisitions Incorporated back to Wizards of the Coast over and over again, saying we had Will down for a meeting time.
That would make a really good, this is a total off tangent, a really good collector's edition DVD. Well, we don't do DVDs anymore, but if we were ever to do a DVD, which we won't do, all those solicitive emails, my pitches to them.
All the pitches and collect the PowerPoints.
Them all. Collect them all.
Oh God, we had that one PowerPoint where we flew Will and I printed out all of the positive comments that I could find on our forums, on Twitter, on the various boards, the fantasy role playing boards. And I handed them a stack. It was like 11 pages, single spaced.
Mm-hmm.
I stapled this huge pack of papers together and just slapped it down in the meeting and said, people love this.
Yeah.
You got to keep doing it.
It's a good team. We always had that 1-2 punch, you know, the authenticity and the passion. And then you came in with the comments and the audience.
Metrics.
Yeah.
I'm
not a metrics guy.
I am a metrics guy. And after one of those resells, I'm trying to remember how it was determined to do the first one we did at PAX.
Oh, that was when we went to the convention center in downtown Seattle. We had the space in the...
Because the first one wasn't in the main theater.
In the Sheraton.
Yeah.
And we needed content. And so I said, let's put the Acquisitions Inc. in
really?
There.
Yeah. And then because the way this...
This was a long shot, man, because no one was doing broadcast D&D at the time. That was a hard sell.
No one was watching other people play D&D at the time.
Yeah.
But so I here's...
But it was so good.
The way that things break down between Mike and I a lot of times when it comes to Acquisitions Inc., Mike is definitely he's a wheeler dealer in terms of putting together the deals. He's really good at, you know, talking to clients and putting all the pieces together. And then a lot of my responsibility comes into the logistics side of things.
Making it happen.
turning ideas into actual product.
Right. Making all my ludicrous promises.
I do have to every once in a while. I sit in on these meetings and I go, well, from a production standpoint, let's not have them.
No, we're going to fly in VR on wires. It'll be great.
God damn, sometimes I want to strangle you, but it works well. It works well. And so, yeah, you said, we put the deal together and mm-hmm. Wizards of the Coast was down for it. They wanted to do some creative things with it. We wanted to do some creative things with it. We didn't quite know what it was going to be. Really, it was just set up a table on the podium, mm-hmm. set them up. We didn't know that Chris was coming with that first diorama.
Nope.
The costume pieces.
No, the players didn't know I was bringing costumes.
The players did not know.
I literally drove over to my house that day and grabbed a cape and a gorget and a sword.
But Will had some stuff for himself, didn't
he? No.
He gave him all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And a fan. Who made the cloak for Jim? I thought it was a fan. Was it Brenna?
Brenna did. I'm pretty sure.
Because he had the cloak for the first one.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it. Like, he was just going to wear it. And a fan has made his skull medallion.
Right. I think they were excited and nervous about that first live game. And so Mike had the idea, like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if I wore
Jim's cloak or something?
He's like,
which is funny because he's the most anti-costume.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now. He's like, hey, you know, Jerry, can you ask Brenna to do it? And she was delighted to put it together, the theater background. So, and then I'm like, well, if he's got it, that's right. If Jim's coming out in a cloak, I got to give something for the other guys. And dashed off to the house.
Yeah. So, yeah, zero idea what was going to happen.
God, Will loved that cape.
We the only things we had planned. So, if you happen to go to PAX that year, mm-hmm. in the bag inserts, there were giant oversized baseball style cards of each of the Acquisition Inc.
That was your idea.
It was,
yeah,
because they wanted to do something to promote the game. Wizards was worried no one would show up.
Right. Yeah, they were super nervous.
They were super
nervous about
having enough people. So they wanted to let all the PAX attendees know what was going on. So we did this promotion, and Scott did the artwork, and he did a great job. Even on the back, it's got stats like old baseball cards. So if you know someone who has them, I've got a full set in my office, but they're super collectible now.
And fun
among those Acquisition Inc. fans. Huh?
I don't remember even seeing those at all.
Yeah, I've got them on my windowsill if you want to go look at them.
Weird.
Maybe I'll take some pictures and you can include it on the site or something.
Yeah, Instagram.
Throw back Thursday.
But what's A.O. Fells has got a deceased banner across it.
That's right. That was such an epic game.
And we had at the time, we were working with a company to do like in-game entertainment.
Yeah.
And they set up a thing where you could text vote in some variables.
It sort of worked.
This is going to be a huge podcast. I don't want to make it too long, but there's reasons we don't do it anymore. Yeah. Like it's
not necessary. We were worried that it wouldn't be interesting enough.
Yeah. And yeah.
Or interactive enough. You know,
turns out the guys are fine on stage by their own
it's a performance, you know, again, no one had done anything like this, having people play a tabletop game in front of a live audience.
Yeah.
And so, of course we were nervous.
But we fill the ballroom.
Is it boring to watch other people have fun? Turns out, no.
No. And I remember sitting there with the sound mixer guy. We fill the room. We're turning people away.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
Yeah, the president of Wizards was there. His executive staff were all there.
It was the crazy folks
who rolled the dice on this.
The response.
On their side, you know.
They took the risk. And there was the audience. I mean, it was the first time. And I've seen it, thank God, many times since then. Standing ovations for critical roles and, you know, a 20 and things like that. Oh, it was so good. I didn't get to see the end of that game because they had scheduled me to moderate a panel.
Mm-hmm.
Like right after that, not realizing and not building into the schedule, the fact that they always run long.
I think I had to dash off to do the expo hall close.
Yeah, so I didn't even get to see the end of that first year, but it was obvious after that we had a huge hit on our hands, and we went right from that ballroom to the main theater.
I was so happy with that. You can kind of even see it in one of the camera angles. I think that Blackfoot Ferret put out. I dash in after garbing the folks and sit down, and sitting beside me is my brother, who got me into D&D when I was in first grade all those years ago. It's such a cool little circle of life moment. It's like, hey, check it out. This thing you set in motion in part resulted in this.
I got my brother into the panel, and he's never played D&D, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he came away afterwards, and he's like, that was the funniest 2 hours, 2+ hours.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any idea what was going on most of the time in terms of the game interactions, but he could follow the narrative, and the guys made it funny.
Well, that's the great thing about it. It shows what Dungeons and Dragons is, which is fundamentally not rules, not dice, not maps, not figures. It's your friends having fun.
It's a loose structure for which to have fun.
Yeah.
So now we're in the main theater, and we're in the historic Paramount Theater.
And the Benny.
Not yet. The first
one. Oh, you're doing
I won't go through all of them.
You haven't advanced to the present day yet.
No, not yet. I won't go through all of them, but I do want to hit on a few key things.
Okay.
And how the show has evolved to where it is now.
Story time with Jeff.
Sort of. So going on to the main theater, we knew that stage was going to look really big with just a table and the guys.
Yep.
And we wanted to do the crazy, something to really put it over the top.
Well, Paramount, keep in mind, when he says the storied, historic Paramount Theater, this is a 100-year-old almost theater. And it's got all the 100-year-old
theater
stuff.
It does all the Broadway
stuff.
Shows when they come through.
I saw
Seattle.
Phantom in the Opera there.
Yeah, I've seen a billion shows, Miss Saigon.
It's got the trap door and the stage, and that was part of the tour. God. We checked that thing out. They have a lift underneath.
Here's a real inside baseball. We really, really someday want to have Jim Dark Magic appear in the middle of the stage with smoke and everything. Turns out all of the stage productions, so you need a... By rule, to lift someone up through the trap door, you need a device called a scissor lift. And the theaters themselves do not provide these devices. They are actually part of the touring company's equipment. So if you're part of a stage production, it belongs to that stage production. And they are super crazy expensive to rent. Like a huge percent of the budget that would not be worth it for 30 seconds.
Yep.
Plus you have to have like crazy certification to use them.
And a couple of union guys there to
oversee it. That's why we haven't done it. I know every time I get asked why we don't do something crazy like that. That's, believe me, we've looked into it.
I'm
the key learnings
now.
From the first year where do not change sets in the middle of production and give yourself enough tech time and get everything pre-planned so that once the show is moving, there's no other interactive parts. There's no, like...
Tell the horrible story that led to these
Well, it wasn't a horrible story.
Clearly,
it was just,
you're
it, there weren't horrible stories. It was just... You. It was nightmarish to get these set pieces on stage. And...
Is this the one where I was painting the bolts with a... tiny little paintbrush when we were assembling the table, or is this pre-table?
That's pre-table.
Okay.
Because our very first year, we used a different table.
Okay.
And, but it as wonderful as it looked for having Scott bust through the styrofoam wall of that we had on stage, it wasn't worth the craziness of those particular set pieces. I believe were put together by a technical drama class at Bellevue Community College.
Yeah.
And so
I think the lo-fi nature,
the
added.
Lo-fi, it worked, but it was there. We didn't see a lot of the pieces until they were delivered to the stage. So it's like,
God, you were so nervous.
I hadn't seen them. I didn't know how they'd work, and we were having to plan
the
on
scheduling
the fly
of the arrival and the schedule.
It was, it was nuts. But we got it to work. So now, we've got a couple different vendors we go through, but I've learned timelines. So we are actually already working a little bit. We know the theme for Prime already, and this is October. So we're a little over a month away from the previous Prime, from Prime 2015, and we already know the theme. Things might change. You know, deals could fall apart, whatever, but we know the general concept of what we want to accomplish for PAX Prime 2016. And so we're already starting those conversations with, now we go, a lot of different people, but a lot of times we go through Loan Shark Games, one of our companies we like to work with. I do a lot of stuff to contract out the set design, get those pieces done as early as possible. And what's funny is they actually contract through another company called Czar of Happiness.
I love that you are talking so much about the production side of things when Josh has a whole list of questions about...
No, it's not that big of a list.
That's what some of the questions were about.
Yeah. Or the vendors?
No, it was like, how does how far advanced?
This is what people want to know. Okay. They want to know everything about it.
All right.
So, and Czar of Happiness is run by a gentleman named Matt Smith, mm-hmm. not the actor.
Right. Different Matt Smith, former WotC marketing guy.
And he has always been the one that does the big dioramas for Chris Perkins.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Which is something that Wizard, like Chris.
He's a legit modeler.
Yeah. But we never know the adventure.
No.
That's coming ahead of time.
Well.
We might know the theme or yes. the realm it's in. Like, yes. for example, we knew it was going to be Underdark months ago.
Well, nowadays, the whole Wizards marketing push is on stories, yeah. stories.
And that hasn't always been the case.
No.
But so we never know how that adventure is going to take form. I don't usually see the diorama. I might know the measurements of it so we can make sure we can get it through doors and things. And
yep.
But I never usually see it tell day of show or day before show
that's
when it gets
such
delivered.
A great reveal.
The guys never see it until it gets on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a big deal. Is we cover it.
We hide it, yeah.
We hide it. We make sure they don't go wherever it is. They might see some of the set pieces ahead of time just because.
Well, this is worth doubling down on though. Is just that, right? That this is completely unscripted.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It comes up all the time like, oh, this is so funny. Like, how do you guys rehearse or whatever? There is no rehearsal. They have no idea what they're going to do when they sit down. Zero.
I think a couple times Chris may have just let Scott know as goes, there's going to be some family history here about the Bronze Bottom Clan, but that's it. Like,
oh,
nothing.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, he'll give them.
But he won't.
Yeah. He's not going to preface it with, be ready for this, but
right.
he might be like, you might want to think about where you fit in the family, or you might want to think about.
Sure.
Because I know
the lines of dialogue and.
Yeah.
Whatnot.
Oh, no. None of the dialogue is scripted.
The monsters,
none
the challenges.
Of that. One of the things we started a few years ago when we saw that sometimes. After not playing for a while, our players would get on stage and not be familiar with their characters.
Oh, that killed
as
me.
As much is we now build into the schedule beforehand while I'm busy getting the stage ready. You can talk about this. This is Mike.
Yeah, the warm-up game. So when I watch these games, I would gnash my teeth a little bit when the patter's going great, the jokes are flying, combat starts. Initiative is rolled, and then there's this pause as everyone scans their sheet for where their initiative modifier is, and it just, it just brings everything to a screeching halt momentarily. It set my teeth on edge. So we started to do a warm-up game.
Warm-up encounter.
Like, sure, warm-up
just
encounter.
Just a single encounter.
Prior to getting everyone in full costume. Day of show. And so we show up. Usually this goes down about an hour-ish before
hour and a half
curtain.
Before curtain.
Yeah, more time the better, but you know how things go. And I just sit down and just rush these guys through a simple setup, a little bit of role-playing, a little bit of combat, just a refresher of here's your abilities, here's where your attacks are. By the way, Scott, you can attack twice per round now. By the way, Mike, these are your spells. I actually put together little spell books for him. One year, I actually wrote them out and put them in
a book.
Physical books, and then the edition changed. So that was good time spent.
No, but what I'm impressed by is you really try to create these little mini encounters that take advantage of each character's unique
abilities. Yeah,
so that they don't forget that they have them.
Yep. Here's your rage. Here's your double.
And
attack.
They still forget sometimes.
Here's your channel divinity.
It does flow much better since we started doing.
But it
that.
Worked, especially in this last one. You know, Jim used his transposition ability, mm-hmm. right? Like Omen in the previous one used his revivify to bring back or spare the dying. I think it was to bring back his sister. Like it,
yeah.
It works. It's better now.
Mike is also responsible for going over and most of the time the players create their own characters. But Mike min-maxes some. Pat makes his own character.
Pat did make his own character. That's right.
Morgan made her own character.
Yep.
Mike's is handwritten, I assume, in his handwriting. So
I make him write out their stuff because that way they learn it.
And then you go over and really, make sure everything fits.
And I collaborate with Jerry. Jerry and I play a lot of Card Hunter and other type role-playing games, so he knows D&D better than any of those guys, and so we go over his prepared list for his cleric spells, and
I collect all the character sheets. I'm sure you guys have seen the little blue binders that I picked up at an office supply store before the very first game. that has their character sheets used to contain their what were the little cards we used to have to cut out.
Yeah, the fourth edition power cards.
It's got like three or four pencils that I sharpen myself.
Artisanal pencils.
Well, I did buy a pencil sharpener. And blank paper, especially for Scott.
For the doodles, yeah.
And Mike. They don't do it so much in the live games, but when we do podcasts, I usually get a couple pages worth of doodles out of them. And then each character does have their own set of dice, sort of, that I kind of keep. Like, Omens is green for cash.
Yeah, we chose the colors very specifically for the big D20s.
They've got that, and then I've got a big collection of just miscellaneous dice. It used to sit in a big goblet in our office, and I just took all of those and put them in a box, and I travel with them now. I dump them on the table so that now that if they need, they don't have to hunt hard for dice on the table.
I think Dave has a few minutes of that warm-up game this time, too.
Yeah, it might be an episode. For PATV, I think there might be some footage of that. So
for this last one.
I think that's all the big... big stuff. I mean, we could talk about intern transitions, but
yeah, that's a good one.
So Will got super popular.
Yeah,
he got famous again.
Yeah, good for him.
More famouser,
right?
And could not make one of the shows.
Right. Yeah, that was a big crisis. He had to go to Dragon Con, I think it was.
Yeah, and our big concern is if we bring someone on that we want them to gel well with,
right?
Mike, Jerry,
it's an ensemble.
And so that's why we don't believe we can talk about all sorts of stuff here. We want to find someone that we feel, first of all, they don't necessarily have to be super familiar with the game.
Mm-hmm.
We can train that up, but we want them to have affinity for it.
Oh, yeah.
And also have a decent pre-built camaraderie with the guys.
Right.
And Patrick was the first replacement. And that worked extremely well.
Should we talk about the history of Patrick?
The history of Patrick?
So Patrick met Penny Arcade, and we met Patrick when through the advertising alias.
He sent us boxes of his books.
I received an inquiry. Like, hey, I'm an author.
They sat in the hallway by your desk in the old Northgate office.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Penny Arcade. I just wrote a book. I'd love it if you guys would read it. And if you think it's good, advertise it. It's like, okay, ignore.
Yeah.
And then he sent it again, and it's like, all right, fine.
Ignored for a long time.
Fine, you can send your book. You know, here's the address, whatever. Book comes in, and it's the name of the
wind. First.
I think Jerry or...
I remember
seeing... It was either me or Jerry, but...
I remember seeing a literal box full of books. There's probably 20 books copies of this paperback in there.
So I'm like, okay, right, some dude wrote a book. Here's his, like... you know, cheesy fantasy novel, and pass it off to Jerry, and grabbed one, and it's like the best fantasy novel
so
I've ever read.
It was so good.
And it's like immediately got in touch, like, holy shit, dude, like, this is amazing. Oh, you like it? I'm like, yeah. Yay. Like, let's do all the ads. Like, I only got this much money. Okay, well,
we'll
triple it. You know, well, we ran ads for it.
Yeah.
And we just totally just gave him this most sweetheart of sweetheart deals. And advertise the shit out of that book.
Right, stayed in communication. He came out to like some Child's Play dinner.
Yeah, he came out. For Wise Man's Fear, he sent out the manuscript copies to me and Jerry for redlining.
I remember hearing a lot of conversations with Jerry giving him feedback and stuff.
Yeah, brutal feedback. And it was just such a joy to have like that 8.5 by 11 novel, you know, with his little side notes in it, and I've got my pen, and like, oh my God, the author's going to read this. Like, that was a highlight. But we became buddies, you know, and like I said at the beginning, he started as a PA fan from way back in the day. And so they were already, the Mutual Admiration Society was real. And so when Will couldn't make it, his star was starting to
rise.
I think the second book was just coming out or had just come out.
I think because we did have to talk Wizards. We're like,
also another hard sell, because they're like, okay,
Will is
a legit internet celebrity. Yeah. And you guys in part sold that first live game on the fact that he was going to bring in millions of fans, which was true and did happen. And so, like, we're really nervous about this random author that you guys are pitching us. And I'm like, well, it's not just a random author. He's a New York Times bestseller. And here he is, because YouTube exists.
Yeah.
Here he is at a book reading. He can command an audience. Yeah. He's got a great voice. He's witty. He's funny. Here's interviews. You know, we really had to sell him. And they were not convinced even after all that. But we had the idea of like, well, no matter what, let's have them all play together to make sure that that on stage experience works.
So let's go back to the podcast. And it ended up, because the theory was, if it didn't work, you guys were never going to hear that podcast.
Right.
Like if he got in the room and they played all day and it didn't.
It was a train wreck or personalities.
We were going to bury it and we're going to find a new intern for the live show.
Right.
And
probably bring in,
somebody.
Somebody.
And turns out it was awesome.
Yeah. And it happened in this room and I fell down on that spot of carpet laughing so hard.
That's right. We rebuilt the table.
Yeah.
Oh, we should go. The table is built by Mr. Mike Failauer. We've used it for every live show except the first one and last year's Prime.
Right.
Because we had five players at last year's Prime.
And this came about because both Jeff and I have theater backgrounds from high school and college.
We hated the sight lines of the normal rectangular table.
So like, I'm going to build a table. It's going to be rad. It's not going to be this plastic thing with a sheet on it.
Yeah, that's a...
It's going to be a bitchin' wood table.
We need a table that has good sight lines so we can spread the players out, but they can still reach over the table and
fully disassembles so it's easy to transport.
Because we needed to open it up to the audience.
I built that with Lane Daughtry of Tinker House Games, good friend of mine, also one of my best men at the wedding.
And signed the wood underneath the table.
We signed the wood. I was sitting there in my garage with a blowtorch because all that stuff is caramelized.
On the back of the table, on the legs, there's little DM left, DM right. So just know to which leg to assign to the Dungeon Masters right.
That's a cool table.
Anyway, I forgot where to... we built the table in this room because we literally moved into the office.
It's got a good sound.
That weekend. Mm-hmm. And we weren't sure the building was even going to have internet or not.
Right.
Or power.
Yeah, this thing was just coming online.
But we flew Patrick out, put the table together, had Perkins, and it was wonderful.
It was so good.
And we knew we had something.
And after that first live game with Patrick, he said, I'm coming to every PAX.
Except for the next one. I can't make the next one.
Except for the next
one. He had a conflict.
Tour obligations.
And so we're like, well, we need another intern.
Right.
And we had already kind of talked with Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys had interacted with her quite a bit previously when she was doing press and things.
Well, one of them, she was on a safari, remember? She couldn't
come.
Well,
she was...
Which one was that?
Oh, that might have been the one with Patrick first.
I think we went to Morgan first.
Before Patrick.
And she said, I'd love to do it, but I'm going to be in Africa on a photo safari.
She's a photo safari to see like African Congan gorillas or something.
Gorillas.
It's like a once in a lifetime permit thing.
Right. And she's like, I think I can get out of it. We're like, are you kidding?
No, we're like, you don't get out of it. You go do that. It's, it's the best excuse ever. Yeah. So the one that Patrick couldn't make, we invite Morgan.
Right.
It goes really well, and that becomes the big cliffhanger.
Yep.
And then we finished it up at Prime, and we had a custom table built that we've only used for that one show that was big enough to fit five people because we knew we were bringing Patrick back. So the door is open at some point to have Morgan rejoin the team.
I think five is too many.
It is. Five is too many for a live show. That's the only reason we keep it at four.
Yeah.
I mean, already the shows are 2.5 to 3 hours long, and I know you guys enjoy it, but some people need to get up and go to the bathroom. Mm. So it's
one day we'll have to have an intermission.
Dear God.
That'd be
like one of the...
That would be awesome.
Five-hour...
You could have a little Chris thing in the intermission.
Yeah.
Chris interstitial.
Oh, right.
Man, that'd be good.
Let's all go
some refreshments,
to the lobby.
All Ack Inc. branded swag available.
Oh, which...
Should we talk about that?
We could talk about it a little bit. So we've made a deal with Scott.
Yep.
That he's going to start doing a lot more Acquisitions Incorporated merchandise.
Yes. So merch for Ack. So this is sort of like the beginning of the year of Ack Inc. And we really want to double down on delivering Ack Inc. content. And one of those is merch.
Long podcast.
So our partnership with Toonhound, they're going to be actually sourcing, producing, and designing the majority of that merch and having it for sale at
PAX. We saw
PAX.
The first shirt this last
The first shirt was, we just, I mean, the ink on that was still drying on that first Prime show, last Prime, with the t-shirts there, but that'll expand over time and you'll see more Ack Inc. content on the way in in more mediums.
So
and
I
I'll
think
sort of leave that sort of
well,
hint
yeah. So I,
hanging.
Let's talk about what's going on, what we can talk about, and then we can get to the reader questions.
Yeah, the couple of questions left that you didn't answer
that we haven't answered. Yes, we are planning on doing more ACK Inc. You guys do have to remember, it is a Wizards of the Coast promotion.
It is, but it is a Penny Arcade brand, crucially.
So we have never done ACK Inc. without Wizards of the Coast having it as part of their marketing strategy.
Right.
And if you guys want to see, I know this was one of the questions, want to see Acquisitions Inc. At other PAXes, let's say, your best avenue is to reach out to whoever the local, you know, for Australia, it's a little different than here, but reach out to the Wizards of the Coast folks.
Yeah.
And don't be rude about it. Don't be mean, but just say, hey, I would love to see, like, tweet at them. Don't be mean.
We should be specific about them. Chris certainly hears a lot of
oh,
that.
Yeah.
But, so but the, main, knows, the but main Wizards account would be
yeah,
the one
you need to get
up
to the corporate
as corporate
folks
as corporate gets.
And let them know that, you know, you would love to see this there and give them value. You know what I love? I love the stories of the people like, I did not ever play D&D until I started listening
to
Acquisitions
that a lot.
Inc. And that's, I mean, that's...
You have been acquired, good
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, exactly. We have Acquisitions Inc. has acquired you into the D&D.
What so I'm excited about, I saw a tweet this morning where someone was soliciting more
info for a Halloween game, right?
Or a Halloween game. Like, is there any official ACK Inc. rules materials out there? And that's something that has been kicking around.
Yeah,
in
like
Jerry
we have
my
lots
head
of
and
conversations about how to do different things. So let's, there's some really exciting things on the table for the next
year
or so.
Yeah.
That we are working on trying to find ways to bring you more Acquisitions Inc.
Right.
In one way or another.
What we realize is that it's grown beyond, like Jeff said, it's grown beyond the promotion where folks are legitimately interested in this. Table Titan, same thing, right?
Yeah.
That started off as a promotion. Now it's like it's this huge comic, you know, that Scott is doing. And I think it is good content and it's entertaining content. We should make more of it.
So, yeah. So it's a fine line, right? Because we don't want to... At this point, Chris Perkins is part of the group.
Yeah.
So we can never do... I don't want to do anything...
Or Chris constrained.
Without Wizards of the Coast's partnership, right? I don't want to do D&D without a partnership.
Ah, right. Sure.
Because I want Perkins to be part of it.
Yeah. If we're doing AI and D&D, we need Chris involved.
And so, yeah. And they are they're part of a larger corporation. They're a big corporation, part of a larger corporation. So
yeah.
Sometimes things take time to work out. But
we're diligently working on it.
We hear you. We're working on it. It's one of the most favorite things for me, even though it's a headache.
When does this podcast go out?
Sooner than things will happen.
Okay.
Not necessarily. Well, so what do you mean sooner than things will happen?
The things that we're talking about are
within
take
the
months.
Last month.
Yeah.
Like
this won't be signed.
Things we're working on will take over a month.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This will be out before that. Yeah.
Well, we can revisit this topic in a little bit.
Yeah, we
well,
can.
A lot
Very
of it.
Soon.
Yeah, there'll be lots of things to talk about. So.
All right, reader questions.
Well, so.
What you haven't covered
I have
already.
An addendum to a question, I guess. Because people ask specifically about Australia and getting, you know, the show there.
Yep.
Is there a Wizards of the Coast presence at PAX there that they can talk to and
so there's
there
no
too?
Wizards of the Coast office in Australia, but there is a Hasbro office in Australia.
And they are the spearhead of what goes on for PAX Australia.
Correct. So in order for, like Jeff just said, in order for Acquisitions Incorporated to happen, we need Mike Grulick, Jerry Holkins, Scott Kurtz, Chris Perkins, and an intern. That's the formula.
Mm-hmm.
This PAX Australia, Scott Kurtz is not going. So that's just a non-starter.
Sure.
You know, and so there was never going to be an ACK Inc. at this PAX Australia. However, he has been to Australia before.
Yeah.
And if, like Jeff said, this is a Wizards of the Coast promotion. If Wizards of the Coast decides that PAX Australia should have an Acquisitions Incorporated game, then PAX Australia will have an Acquisitions Incorporated game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I would love it.
Yeah.
And I know that, I mean, we keep on getting questions and
it's a matter, it's just a matter of them.
It's a matter of timing.
Timing and
the stories,
them truly understanding, I think, the desire by the fans.
Well, yeah, but it's ultimately, it has to serve the marketing objectives and like we talked about earlier, there is this concept now on Wizards of the Coast marketing where they tie it to stories. Like this time it was
Underdark.
Rage of Demons.
Rage of Demons before it was The Rise of Tiamat.
Right. And Rage of Demons has that campaign has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if a particular show does not fall within that window, then from their perspective, it doesn't make sense to do it.
It doesn't make sense to do it.
I see.
But we're going to, we're going to keep working with
them. We know the demand is there.
We're going to keep working with them to find ways to, even if it doesn't hit a particular,
we've got some creative ideas,
marketing blurb, because we know that you guys just want the acquisitions and content, regardless whether it lines up with a particular marketing goal. Right. We're trying to be very creative outside the box, and this has been an ongoing thing for several years.
Yeah.
But I think we're close to some solutions. Whether I don't think it'll solve everything, but yeah. I think we're close to some solutions that allow us to create more content.
I should tell you how that lunch went, by the way.
not
right now, but I have some information on that.
So this one I don't understand, because I didn't see the last show, unfortunately. It says, did Jeff survive the attack by the Flaming Fist?
It was from East.
Well, based
God
on the
damn
animation,
you Perkins.
Yeah.
No, I hope not. I don't want to come back in my weird. So, I've always worked behind the scenes at these things and making sure everyone's in the right places at the right time, and all the stuff producers do, our stage managers. And so it got a little meta at the East game, and
it was wonderful.
Perkins made an office administrator of the local acquisitions brand, kind of modeled after me with a horrible voice.
It sounded just like you.
Shut up. And the guys took out some of their frustrations they normally experience with me that they don't demonstrate to me when I'm ordering them around to do things.
Oh, they demonstrate. They tell you to get out of their office all the time.
They demonstrated it much more overtly on stage, sure. In which my character had
set up your murder.
Incredible death. The counterpart that I've had over at Wizards of the Coast, who kind of wrangles things on their end, his bright idea was that I was going to come back as some supervillain.
Mm. Oh, sure.
Because the origin story sounded like this is how a supervillain is made.
Yeah, franchise is full of horrible
some dark
death
magic
beasts.
Screwed over my character pretty good. Yeah, my NPC.
You could be a revenant. You could come back as
so
a spectator.
I have not heard anything from Ghost. Mr. Chris Perkins, much like he doesn't tell the guys. He doesn't tell us either.
Oh, yeah.
It's entirely possible that somehow,
he is a rat bastard.
We brought
DM.
AOFL back from death by going after.
There are myriad ways to
hell dimension.
To have Jeff come back.
But I don't know.
For good or evil.
All right. Finally, if you were part of ACK Inc., who would your character be?
This is a little traumatic for Mr. Failauer since we've been doing this.
Sure.
He so badly wants to be. Like, I can see him wanting to be on stage. Like, he would never do it, right? Because it's about the guys.
Sure,
it's about
sure.
them. But
I do have keep a
like
D20 in my
league,
pocket, just in case.
He's the minor league baseball player that wants to get called up to the big leagues, even though he probably plays the game better than all of them.
That's definitely true.
he's
the tongue biting that happens when I know on their sheet is the perfect solution
you.
To that
it
exact situation because I put
so
it there
I
and they don't use it.
We're able to scratch the itch a little bit by having him DM those
warm-up
games. But what would you? Would you take the character you normally play in your weekly game?
No, I would. It'd be something original. So the franchise is actually a good example of that, right? Where they had all those back rooms with all those weird, like their head of R&D and all that stuff. I think in fiction,
would you be like
I'd be the
master?
Franchise guy. I'd be the franchise salesman.
You wouldn't do your normal persona is actually kind of similar to Viari's persona in terms of just swashbuckler.
Oh, that's just me.
Zero. Well, but that's when you play games.
When I play games,
I tend to default to me. That way.
Yeah, my buddies have pointed that out.
But this is your character. This is the character you'd be as part of Acquisition.
Yeah, but in the fiction, I think I would be a franchise salesman. I'd be going around to different cities in Faerun.
I thought
saying, what would your name be?
I thought you'd
welcome,
be like
welcome.
The arms master. Who'd be like...
Oh, that's on the side. That's kind of the joke, right? It's like, oh, here's this person knocking on my door, but if they don't open it, we skewer them. It'd be a very aggressive sales pitch. Let's just say it that way.
So I've never really thought about it. I don't play D&D. I have played it a couple times. It's not because I don't want to. It's because I consciously...
Oh my God, we never invited you to play D&D.
No,
you have. This is a very special episode.
Shut up. I have been invited a couple times. I choose not to play because I allocate my time very carefully on what leisure activities mm-hmm. I do, and I would like it too much. Like, it would become too much
of
a time sink.
I'd love to see you in a game.
When I do play these type of, you know, whether computer or whatever, I love just being the brawler, kind of what Benwin does now. Like, I would be... Maybe it's because I'm not that type in real life, but uh-huh. And WoW, I was the DPS warrior. Like, I wasn't a tank warrior. Fuck mm-hmm. that. I was a DPS warrior. So I think I would play, you know, dumb human brute sword guy. Like, that is...
I'd like to see that.
I like that role of not...
As a sword guy, though, I do have to, you know what, lay off the stereotypes.
He's, you know, he's like Conan the Barbarian or something. Not like
not all sword guys.
Well, I mean,
hashtag not all sword guys.
It's by the type of sword. I don't use foil. It would be a giant two-headed broadsword.
Yeah,
no
shirt.
Shield.
No shirt.
No, none of this shield bullshit.
Okay, all right.
Just a little wrap of leather around his waist.
Same. So that's the type of. So I'd probably be a dumb intern that would last all of.
You are already in Ack Inc. There's no speculation.
Well, that character, but if I was to be an actual
you would be
player
the office manager.
That's an NPC.
Yeah, and that he is didn't not create a PC. That wasn't his choice.
Okay.
I tried so hard. So when I saw the animation that Chris Straub made for the start of the Last Pride game, and he incorporated my character and drew a Chris version of me with a baseball cap.
Yes.
I tried so hard to get a custom-made Ack Inc. baseball cap that matched the one for
Keep
the cartoon.
Trying. I want to see you in that next prime.
That I was going to wear backstage while I was doing everything, putting it all together.
This time. You have a year.
We'll see.
Ish.
If I show up again.
All right.
That was an hour long, depending on how much you edit out.
About an hour. If you guys have any questions or topics you would like us to discuss, please email podcasts@penny-arcade.com.